Tommy Joyner.
Billy.
What's up? Are you eating like tapioca pudding or something?
No, man. I was actually. You want me to tell you exactly what I was doing?
Yeah, I do.
I had water in my mouth because I just took a big gulp of water, and then my water bottle is it's a glass milk bottle, like a glass liter milk bottle that I turn into like my daily water bottle.
That's pretty dope.
It's got a good size to it. I like to grip it.
Grip it.
But it's got a bunch of fucking shit floating around in it. And I was examining whether or not I felt like that was like acceptable for me to keep drinking the water.
So you just kind of kept it in the holster, wondering whether or not you're going to actually swallow it down.
Yeah. And I figured I didn't really have anywhere to spit it out. So I just swallowed it.
I think that's going to make you tougher, dude. Like, if it doesn't kill you, which I doubt it will, it's probably just going to make you super tough.
That's fair. Yeah.
So
what's up, man?
So how's the weather in Medellin? Is it like 82 degrees every day?
Yeah, dog. You know, you've been here. It's
I know.
Pretty much like it always is, but well, actually, it's very sunny lately. Like it's actually we're just coming out of rainy season, so it's actually getting back to the point where it's actually too fucking hot some days to walk around. You just want to take your shirt off, and that's not acceptable, you know. So
yeah. Is that a cultural thing, or is that just like normally you just kind of, unless you're at the beach, keep your shirt on type thing?
Yeah, man. Yeah, it's weird. I think a lot of countries I see that, like, you know, in the States, like, you know, go to LA or Miami or, I mean, anywhere, any big city, and you see people running around, like, everybody's got their shirt off. Like, dudes just go rub their shirt off. And, like, I used to do that. Yeah. And here, like, it's much more rare that I see that. Like I see some bulky dudes running around with their shirt off sometimes. But they get looks, man. They get looks.
They get looks like, damn, or like, man.
No, I mean like, you know, both types probably, you know?
Right.
Probably like,
I wonder. Yeah.
I mean,
I was thinking about that back in Chicago. I used to do that. I used to like run on the beach or by the beach, and I would sometimes take my shirt off. Cause it is nice when you're like overheated and the sun's out, and especially when you're around other people with their like shirts off and people that are getting down to like, you know, minimal cloth, it's kind of nice to like do that. But then I've noticed that I would be running out of the beach back into the city, and there would be a moment where I'd be like, oh, now I'm a weirdo. And I would like put my like shirt on, and it was always kind of awkward.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. I used to do the same thing, actually, right on Lakeshore there, bro.
Yeah. That's the strip, dude. That's a good run, man.
Oh, dude, it's so dope, man. Good. Glad we have Chicago in common, you know? So it's good to relate to that.
Yeah, it really is. Well, because I really think that's a good point, because I think that every city, and obviously it changes over time, but every city has a different dynamic, which is so obvious, but I'll just state the obvious. But I think each city has a different feel, you know, like I couldn't like describe to you a city that you've never been to that I have and like have you have the feeling about it.
Right.
I mean, I could try my best, obviously, but like when you were in Sri Lanka for how long were you there? For like a year?
I was there for 6 months with the exception of I went for 6 months total, but it's a month of that in Barcelona with you guys.
Yeah Okay. So but like, and I think that you know, I've never been to India, I've never been to a lot of different places obviously, but from what you told me about Sri Lanka, I can kind of wrap my head around a limited perception of it, but had I been there, obviously, It's a whole different thing. There's a guy, I think his name is Taylor Pearson, who wrote about how cities whisper something to you or some shit like that. And he wrote it very articulately, but it was basically something along the lines of, like finding the city that whispers the message that you really want to be involved in. And I just thought that was a really cool way of thinking about it because, you know, I think both of us have a certain affinity, if that's the right word, for Barcelona. And I think it's because of that. And every time I've been, we've already mentioned this before, but every time I've been to Barcelona, something kind of fucked up has happened almost every single time, but it's still, but it's still my favorite. Like it's just, I kind of like the fact that if you're not on your toes, like you could get got there, you know?
Yeah, man. I've never been got in Barcelona, but I know plenty of people who have.
Yeah. I got picked once.
I've never been picked, man. They've had to forcibly take from me. I've been mugged, and that sucked.
Where was that? That was in Medellin?
That was right outside of Medellin, a little town called Manizales.
Was it? Did they have a knife or a gun?
He had a knife, and he had drugs in his system. He was a red-eyed maniac.
And did you even think once about just start like doing some like you know tango and cash fucking kick to the balls, knee to the chin type fucking crazy moves, or were you just like, okay, this is not worth it?
Yeah, actually my first reaction was to size him up to like to decide whether or not I was just gonna fucking hit him in the face.
Right.
Because I've been stabbed before. So now
Jesus Christ, dude. Where did you get stabbed? I mean, not like where, what city and where, what, like in the ribs?
I got stabbed in Carbondale, Colorado in my back when I was 13 years old.
That's fucking crazy. That's your hometown, right?
Yeah.
So you guys, would you say that you guys don't play there?
Oh, we don't.
Like nobody's playing?
We don't play.
That's fucking wild, dude.
Yeah. We don't play, man. You know, people take us for a joke. They don't really know what goes down, you know?
One time we almost had some shit go down where we were driving with people from the other side of town. We're like swerving at us and shit. And it was like, pull over, you know? And then like, everybody like pulled over and I had nunchucks on me. And nothing happened. But it was like, I remember later thinking like, what in the fuck was I going to do? The answer is fuck somebody up, probably. No, I'm just kidding. I don't know. It was such a weird time growing up in general.
Yeah, dude. Man. Yeah, dude. In high school, we had a couple times like that. Dude, we actually had some kids pull over. We all agreed on a neutral fight spot, and then we drove. And we had like 10 cars roll up, and all these fucking idiots get out of these cars and just have like everybody gets out and starts talking shit. And like there was like when there would be like enough shit talking, like somebody would go at it, and like those two people would fight. And we just fucked these kids up, dude. It was great. Like one by one,
was it like a tournament?
It ended up being like a one-on-one like fight thing, and then somebody would jump in and like throw another hit on someone else, and then someone would fucking hit that person to like get them away from like the individuals fighting. So like
right.
It was like that kind of respect, but it was still fucking cheap shots, and then the cheap shot would be like highly frowned upon by either side. But it never turned into like
a
total brawl.
Right.
It was really weird, man.
Here's the thing. Like, I think, you know, I'm like not for violence. But if everyone involved legitimately is like, okay, here's the rules, kind of, you know, like, let's just figure this out. Obviously, it's still dangerous because anything can happen. But on some level, you have to take responsibility and realize, like, if I'm going to get into this altercation, let's fucking do this thing, you know?
Yeah, dude, we used to get in so many fights in high school and college, and even college, yeah. And I love it. Yeah. Such a rush.
That's crazy, man. I trained in kickboxing for like, I don't know, 7 years, and I've never had, I wouldn't even say that I've had like a straight up real fight for real. Like, I've had like minor things here and there, but nothing like, you know, not like a good old fashioned fight, I wouldn't say. But
yeah, man. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah. Yeah, you were breaking up at one point very slightly, but it went away quickly. So
okay.
So what do you say, man? Should we dive into this thing?
I think we should, yeah, before we use
it. All right, so this is what's up. So we're gonna talk about section 3 of part 1 of Seeking Wisdom from Darwin to Munger by Peter Bevelin. This section is named Adaptive Behavior for Survival and Reproduction. So,
yeah,
stay tuned.
Cool, man. Well, yeah, we'll get started, guys. Hope you enjoyed that intro, and let's get ready.
Yeah. Damn, that was 11 minutes.
Hey, man. Sometimes, yeah.
As we talk, yeah.
Thorough intro.
Yeah, I like it. Okay, cool. So you wanna call me back?
Yes, sir.
All right. Ciao. And we are live.
Yeah, we're live, man. We're going to jump right into jamming about adaptive behavior for survival and reproduction. A lot of cool stuff in here, man.
Yeah, I agree, man. This section, I mean, a lot of this is good. I love the way that this book is unfolding into these different topics and ideas. Again, it's the Seeking Wisdom by Peter Bevelin, From Darwin to Munger. The first two sections that we already went through were Our Anatomy Sets the Limits for Our Behavior. Part 2 was The Evolution Selected the Connections that Produce Useful Behavior for Survival and Reproduction. And now we are talking, as you just said, about for survival and reproduction.
Yeah, man.
Good stuff, man. I think it's funny. I don't know what you think about this, but there were parts of this that made me kind of cringe a little bit. And I think it was because, like, there's a lot of things nowadays, as they say, that it seems like you can't even talk about certain topics without people getting super fucking agitated and worked up. And, you know, like I just imagine their vocals would just go up an octave. Like, what do you mean by that kind of thing? And
yeah,
but I like the way he comes at it, because he's really just talking about things that have been discovered, studies that have been done, you know, and to say, you know, people like to do the whole virtue signaling thing, obviously, where they're, you know, oh, that's not me. I don't act in my own self-interest, but it's like, no, you do, because everybody does.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And then, I mean, like, one thing that they talk about is that only behavior that is selfish for the mutual good is in an individual's self-interest and therefore favored by natural selection. So it's interesting, because there's a lot of stuff that even people say that they're doing that's altruistic when they're thinking about someone else. And really, a lot of it comes down to actually that benefits you and someone as well, which is cool. And I think that's fine. Like, if that's why you do good things, because it makes you feel good or it benefits you in some way, then that's kind of like why this whole thing makes sense about, like, why we should all do what's in our best self-interest, because oftentimes that is what's good for the mutual good as well.
Yeah. Yeah, man. I think an interesting topic for me as well, because a while ago when I was up in Chicago, I volunteered a few different times, and one of the times we went to the Shedd Aquarium there with like some foster kids, and these kids were kind of like standoffish, like they weren't willing to connect easily, and, you know, understandably so. But by the end of it, like, the group that I was in, each one of us had our own unique handshake. Like, we had it was a whole experience where, like, they opened up to me, and, like, it was just cool. You know, but then saying bye to them, I had this weird reaction to that, because it was just like, it made me wonder, like, how many times in these kids' life did they have to say goodbye to someone forever, you know? And I don't know the answer to that. It might be even, like, the wrong question. I'm not sure. But I started thinking more about it, like, you know, because I felt good about the experience, and I think they had a good time, but the fact that I'm volunteering and having a good time was fucking with my head for a while. And then I ran into this quote by Abraham Maslow that said something like, the dichotomy between selfishness and unselfishness falls away altogether in healthy people because healthy people realize that all acts are both selfish and unselfish. And it almost gave me permission to be like, okay, it's okay to feel both things at the same time is the way I interpreted it. But I think that's related to what we're reading here, where it makes sense just for our survival that we are in, you know, we have ourself as a focal point in our interest, you know, and I think I'm rambling on here, but also though, like we have to take care of ourselves if we are going to take care of other people. Right. I mean, so.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. Like it's an interesting balance that I think if you haven't looked into, I think intuitively a lot of people can understand it. But I think some people probably have a difficult time separating like actual selfishness from like, I'll just call it altruistic selfishness. And I think that's the problem with people who are maybe like a little less developed on this personal development train or have, or who lack that type of intuition. Because we all feel the same thing. And I feel like we should, you know, inevitably kind of understand what that means. But I think where we get away from it is when people actual selfishness is like there can be negative forms of selfishness that aren't applied to this because it's not only in our best interest, but it's at the expense of others, and it doesn't have to relate to like survival. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it definitely does. I think that's an interesting distinction because there's like levels of selfishness, right? Like what category, and then I think that in itself would be subjective, right? Like how someone might interpret one thing or another, but maybe there is like a universal code or something like that where, you know, you're like little stuff, right? Like holding the door for someone, like just being like, nah, I'm in a hurry, I'm not gonna do it. But then there's also like, obviously there's that range of like the real awkwardness where you're like, they're 10 feet away, and if you hold the door, you're just kind of being awkward about it.
Yeah.
But so that was a terrible example, but I do think that's a good point, man, because it's not to say that we should. I feel like reading some of this stuff, when you break these things down to this level of analysis, it almost makes things seem much more mechanistic, like much more like a machine. And therefore it takes all the like feelings out of it in some levels. And it almost makes it seem like, well, then what's the use of doing good things for people anyway, if all of it is just some kind of selfish tribal evolutionary thing. But I don't think that it needs to go in that direction. And maybe I'm jumping to that conclusion, but I get that sensation when I'm reading some of this stuff sometimes. And I don't know if it's what I think or if it's just what I think other people would think if they interpreted this stuff. But I think it's still useful. I think it's still useful to do good things for people, even if you do feel good about it, so do they. And then, you know, it's kind of cliche, but that whole pay it forward thing, right? Like that really does happen. When someone holds the door for me, it's not the door. Like I can open a door, obviously. Most people can't, right? But the fact that this one single person decided I'm gonna do just this small gesture. And actually, I'll even use a different example. I was in not Santiago, Chile, but Viña del Mar, and I was leaving, heading back to Santiago, and I had food poisoning. So I was out of it for like 3 days, and that day I was just coming out of it. I felt super weird, kind of cleansed, but in a funk. And this woman stopped me. There was two women talking, and this woman stopped me and asked me if I could help her lift up her grate to get her shop open for the day. And I opened it for her. She said, thank you. I, you know, said you're welcome or whatever. I don't remember exactly, but I walked away and I was on level like 3 in this weird funk. And the fact that she chose me to ask if I could help her open that put me at like an 8. I was like, I had a different swagger after that. Like I felt so great. And it was just the most bizarre thing. And all it was just this woman looked at me and said I was worthy of help. Like I could help her out. And it felt so great to be able to do that. I don't know, that man. Like, and cool what story. We're talking about here, it's like, man, this is on an evolutionary level. It's just like, okay, it kind of makes sense for us to spread. Let's just dive into this next part. That morality, right? The fact that she needed help and I could help made me feel great. And I think that maybe she, I don't know, I can't speak for her actually, obviously, but so this, he talks about Darwin in this book, and he says that a high standard of morality would also benefit a tribe. And, you know, I've been thinking about this whole thing about the tribe a lot more. And I wonder, because I think a lot of people look at this whole tribal mindset as a lot of the shortcomings of how we interact with each other in today's social realm, digitally, essentially, right? Like, because we're so tribal, like, you know, fuck Trump. Like, I'm on the fuck Trump side, or I'm on the pro-America side, you know? I was talking to a friend recently. It's weird now. Like, if you put up an American flag, that now kind of means that you're pro-Trump. It's weird. That's the American flag. What the hell are we talking about here? It's so weird, but it's all this like tribalism, right? But it's got us this far. So there's something powerful about the tribal aspect that it can't, I guess what I'm trying to say is I feel like it can't all be bad, or I guess it could, but it doesn't seem like that makes sense to me.
What can't all be bad?
Like just having the aspect, the tribal aspect that it seems like we can't necessarily get away from.
Right. Oh, so you're saying that you're talking about the negative implications of that and saying that it can't all be negative. There has to be some other ways.
Yeah. And I guess maybe I shouldn't speak in hyperbole, right? Because maybe it really is 100% negative and we need to shed all of it. But that doesn't make sense to me necessarily, right? Like, but I think, and it really comes down to probably understanding it well enough that you recognize when it's becoming something that's a detriment to our species, right? Like, if you go to a baseball game and you root for your team and you don't, you know, pick a fight with someone randomly about sports, then you're probably doing it okay. But at the point where, like, I don't know, I saw some dude fucking like died in LA like 4 years ago, right? From a fight in the stands or something. It's like, okay, this is too much. What are you guys doing? This is a game.
You think this is a game, Billy?
You think this is a game? Yeah. I don't know. Feels like it. It's an infinite game, brah.
Everything's a game.
Right.
No. I think there's a lot to go into there. And that's interesting. I love that he talks about the fact that a high standard of morality would also benefit a tribe. I think that's something that's important to think about. Because on a micro level, he also talks about the fact that it won't like necessarily bet and change an individual's like life in any way. If everybody kind of like leveled up slightly in their morality, then it does give a significant advantage to one tribe over another in a number of ways. So that's a cool thing to think about.
Yeah, I agree. I like the way he talked about the prisoner's dilemma, which is something that you know you hear about, I think, fairly often, but I don't usually like sit back and really think about it that much, it seems like. But
well, I think this one's cool because it takes morality off the table a little bit. Like this gets to the root of whether or not humans are this gets to the root of how humans think about survival, and it's actually like a really, really great way, I believe, to isolate a test that really looks at that characteristic versus anything having to do with morality. And I guess you could say it's like you blame your friend and get off free, that like says something about like your moral compass, but not really. I mean, it's more just about like it really like isolates that survival characteristic.
Right. And then he goes into the fact that the best situation is if you can trust each other. And that's the key factor, right? He says, but here is the dilemma. You don't know if you can trust your partner. Cooperation only works if you and your partner can trust each other. He goes on and says that repetition tests trust, and trust is a key fragile thing. So, like, you know, in the prisoner's dilemma, if you think about it, it's basically set up so that you know that the two in the situation can't necessarily trust each other. Given that, then that's the dilemma, right? The dilemma is like, I don't know what he's going to do. So therefore, if I, you know, I'm going to try to, you know, at least improve my situation somewhat, even though that wouldn't be the best ultimate situation.
Let's explain what it is real quick for the folks listening. If they haven't heard of the prisoner's dilemma, because I'm sure most people have heard of the prisoner's dilemma or they talked about it in school, but they haven't heard the rules of the game in a while. So anyway, let's say you and a homie get picked up for a crime and you get arrested and someone begins interrogating you. Here's the scenario. If you both deny the crime, there's still enough evidence to put you in jail for 1 year. If you both confess, you both go to jail for 3 years. If you confess, but your partner denies, you'll be free and your partner will go to jail for 10 years. If you deny, but your partner confesses, you will go to jail. You will go to jail for 10 years. So that's a dilemma. You got to decide what to do in terms of like making that final decision. And they've run a couple different tests, even one where the people were able to talk to each other. But when it comes down to actually making the decision, even if you talked, I think that's a really interesting part of it as well. That it's still like, it still comes down to like, what's he actually going to do? It doesn't even matter if you've talked to him about like the plan, you know what I mean? That's like the crazy part of this game. Like cooperation, is part of it. Cause you're like, you rather have the trust without having that conversation, but even after you've had it, you still have to have the trust that they're going to do what they said.
Yeah. That's not a trivial thing. Like if you think about it, trust, I feel like a lot of times words are just thrown around, right? Like, you know, you should really, you know, trust and all this, all the different aspects and virtues of life. But it really isn't trivial. Like, I mean, like the fact that like, if you sat down and wrote down on a piece of paper, who are the five people that you trust most in your life? That might be an actual like illuminating experience to sit and really kind of reflect on that. Like, why is that true? And are you living in a way that actually respects the fact that you trust this person so much? And then on top of that, are you living in a way that people look to you as if they can trust you? Those are, you know, and we'll get into that. I'm assuming because he talks about reputation in here, but it's big, man. I was reading this and it kind of fucked me up a little bit, just thinking about how important it is. And it's something that I think that I'm somewhat blind to because I feel like I go out of my way, I think, to make sure that I'm not like doing harm to people, but even more so, like even lying on any level. I don't like doing that. And a lot of it comes down to how much easier it is. On a selfish level, it's so easy to just be honest because you don't have to like try to think about like, oh, what did I say to that person? Then what did I say? You know, all that extra shit. Fuck all that, man. I feel like it's just so much easier on a very selfish level. It's just easier. And I think because of that, a lot of people that I associate with, I think that they feel like they can trust me, but they can't. No, I'm just kidding. But no, man. So one other thing that you mentioned, it's not that communication guarantees trust, but it does increase it, right? It's another way to create cooperation is to let the partners communicate during the game. Talking encourages cooperation. It doesn't guarantee it, but it does encourage it, right? You get to know someone, you start to feel like, okay, well, you know, I feel like I could trust this guy in this situation. Can you imagine actually being in that situation though, that like the prisoner dilemma situation? That is kind of fucked.
Interesting.
Then there's in this section particularly, he talks a lot of, he uses a lot of Darwin quotes that are fascinating. Says, this is conscience, for conscience looks backwards and judges past actions inducing that kind of dissatisfaction, which if weak, we will regret, and if severe, remorse. Which is kind of really talking about almost like an evolutionary aspect of our conscience.
Yeah, which part did you read that? Is that after, that's after the prisoner's dilemma then?
Yeah, it's just after that. It's under the often cooperation is in our best interest, and it's a paragraph taken from The Descent of Man by Charles Darwin. It's the last sentence in that paragraph.
Oh, but it's in that same section, right?
Yep. Yep. Which, and then he goes into talking about tit for tat, which essentially is like, you know, if you and I are interacting in something, whatever you do, I'll do back to you. Which is a really, I remember in a negotiations class I took, they've done studies, and that seems to be like the best way to handle a negotiation, especially if, and not even especially, I think only if it's going to be a long-term relationship. Because if you go to a used car dealership, they're going to try to like take you to the cleaners, as they say, because you're probably not going to ever come back there again. But like,
well, he actually uses a car mechanic in here.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I guess used car dealership could be good, but mechanic, probably even a better example, because it's like such a transactional service and it's short, right? So that's a perfect example of a quick interaction with someone where you're going to actually do whatever you have to do based on the situation. Like he talks about like mechanics, don't go to mechanics on the freeway, go to a mechanic like that's has like a neighborhood garage, right? And has a reputation where everyone knows him. That's jumping ahead a little bit as well, but we can get back to that.
Yeah, and I think that applies also to restaurants. Like if you're in a city that's touristy and you just go to the spot that has the good real estate, it's not bad necessarily, but it's not the best food usually.
Yeah, because, no, not at all, man.
Because it's not, they're not trying to get repeat customers. They're trying to just get you to sit down.
Yeah, I think that's for the same reason. Like in Medellin, we have this area called Parque Lleras, and that's like the most popular spot. But it's just like going to Cancun and fucking like just, they don't care. Like they're just on the beach and like, you know, and they, it doesn't really matter if you like their food. Like it has to be good enough so that you won't die. But like,
yeah, that'll be bad press. I wonder if that's changing though with like online reviews and things like that. But I think for the most part, people that are walking around aren't looking at reviews. Like especially when you're on vacation or whatever, you at some point you just get hungry and you have to find something.
Well, I think that's an interesting thing that you state, because for some restaurants, that's not ever even going to matter, because like people already know what they're getting and they're like accepting that. I feel like Senior Frogs isn't going to, like, no one's going to look at TripAdvisor to understand whether or not Senior Frogs has 5 stars. They already fucking know what they're getting into at Senior Frog. Right. Like I see like KFC and Burger King ranked on fucking TripAdvisor sometimes. And sometimes when I'm in the city, like it's fucking got 5 stars, which probably says a lot about the city that I'm in. That's also funny. But it's like, why would I pay attention to TripAdvisor's review of this fucking KFC? Like, I know what I'm getting into here.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's a good point. It's interesting too, though, like different products or franchises in different areas of the world have like a whole different prestigiousness to them. Like,
yeah, that's
true. I remember I was on a bus that we took on a ferry across the Strait of Gibraltar from Spain into Morocco. And we drove by a McDonald's in Morocco. So it was like crazy, right? Because it's like in the middle, it felt like it was in the middle of nowhere. And then on the way back, I don't know what time it was, but there was a line out the door, like through the parking lot to get in this McDonald's. And it blew my mind. What's that?
Yeah, that's ridiculous. I can relate to that.
But, and I've heard stories like McDonald's is looked at as like almost like fine dining in some areas of the world.
Yeah.
Which is kind of crazy, but I think probably off topic also.
Yeah. Well, no, I like it, man. I think we can get back to that. But,
Anyway, so we're talking about like evolving to act in your self-interest, because that is what is in our genes. And we do that for the good of us, but we also kind of do that for the good of others, because at times acting in your own best self-interest help the greater good, let's call it, which is cool. So let's get into seeking explanations.
Okay, let's do that. Actually, you know what? Before we do that, real quick, one thing that I thought was really interesting about this whole tit for tat idea is that lends itself well to doing the right thing, right? Like basically the golden rule, treat others as you'd like to be treated. And then if everyone's playing the rules of the tit for tat, if I'm nice to you, then you're nice to me. One thing he mentions here is as long as neither opponent knows when the game ends, it pays to be nice. That's a crucial, I think, aspect of as long as no one knows when the game is going to end. That those mechanics you're talking about, those local mechanics, they're nice to you because of the fact that they have repeat business. But if they know, like, let's just say in a scenario where they know that they're being bought out or something like that in the next month, they're not going to be around, they might, without you knowing, so they know the game's going to end, quote unquote game, and you don't know, so you're still being nice, but they know they don't need to anymore. I think that's like a, you know, is, I don't want to be like Machiavellian or whatever, but like you got to look after yourself. And if you're in a situation, especially if it's high stakes and there's a chance that you don't feel like you have a good beat on the rules of the game and or like when this interaction might actually be more finite than it seems, you might be in a shaky spot. I don't know. That's really abstract and kind of vague, but I thought that was a really interesting point to bring up, that it all really comes down to understanding the, are you in a finite game or are you in an infinite game? Is this game going to continue on or not? And if not, maybe not, don't get, you know, overly paranoid, which obviously it sounds like I am, cause I'm like, watch out. But it's something I think worth at least, making sure you don't get taken to the cleaners. Use that expression again.
Yeah, it's a good one, isn't it?
Yeah. I don't know where that came from.
I ended up skipping a step. The next section is actually a tendency for fear. How our fears kind of have an implication in terms of how we act as well, which gets brought into like a lot of decision making. But it's really important to understand how and why we may react and what we're going to react instinctively with prior to actually making those decisions. Regardless of whether or not that decision related to what we were, but
which makes a lot of sense, right? Like plain and simple, if the people who evolved were the people that weren't super eager to overlook something that could be dangerous.
Right.
So like on the other side of that, obviously, is if you're overly cautious, you might not even be right. You're probably wrong 90% of the time in terms of something being actually dangerous, but still that behavior increases odds of passing genes, which is makes sense, right? I mean, this guy, Rush Dozier, who wrote in a book called Fear Itself, says, quote, "Fear is fundamental because life is fundamental. If we die, everything else becomes irrelevant."
That's a good one.
It's pretty, yeah, pretty straightforward, right? Like, makes a lot of sense. Like, overall, let's just make sure we stay alive because, you know, everything, this coffee is pretty damn good, but it doesn't make much sense if I'm dead right now.
Right. So the whole point of that, and like, I think we probably jammed enough on that subject in terms of fear, to be honest, because that sums it up perfectly. And the whole point of that is that people sometimes make selfish decisions because they are fearful instinctively, and being fearful leads to making decisions that are relevant to your own survival. That sort of thing. So that's why that gets brought in here, and why it's important to think about in the context of of this chapter of selfishness.
Mm-hmm.
The next one is seeking explanations, which I think is another really interesting one.
This section, yeah, I put a star next to this section because I think this is like just badass. I mean, the first part he talks about how we categorize things. And basically we don't like uncertainty, right? And I look at uncertainty as like almost synonymous with chaos, right? There's a certain amount of chaos that alludes to like evolution and change, and it's good, but it can be too chaotic. And that's where, you know, you don't know which way is up and there's no room for growth. It's just complete, you know, chaos. And then the idea of categorizing things, it creates order. You know, like we always want to make sense of things. We connect dots that aren't even there sometimes, just so that our mind can at least interpret what we're observing. And that's just an interesting aspect to just the human condition. But then he talks about this part was awesome, talking about how, for example, many animals when foraging start with a random search and only change their behavior when they find a rewarding stimulus. Then they move towards it. I love that. I like really love that aspect. I know he's talking about animals, but I feel that way with how I do a lot of shit. Like when I'm writing or whatever, I'll just go down a path where it's just like, oh, that looks interesting. And it makes the whole whatever I'm working on, it takes a lot longer. But I like that aspect. Just peppering in randomness in things that we do is it can be on two sides, right? On one side, it makes you less quote unquote productive. On the other side, though, you uncover things that you just never would have found had you not taken on that curious spirit of randomness and ventured off on a kind of a random path.
Well, I think that's the whole point of this section, is like humans have a default to want to organize and categorize things. And when they don't or aren't able to do that or make sense of something, they feel uncomfortable, which evolutionarily apparently had to do with our survival or our best interest. If it was too like random, it probably created fear and was like something that could be related to like our survival. And that's why we chose not to go down that path, right? But it turns out that implementing randomness, they use an example of honeybees. And when they, the example that they use is taking honeybees, like blindfolded. I don't know how you blindfold a honeybee. Maybe.
Yeah, I don't know either.
You just put a case over them or whatever. But anyway, when they took them from like one nectar site to another nectar site, they could always find their way back and forth, right? When they left them at either one, they could find their way back to like the other one. But then if they left them for a period of time and then they moved to another nectar site, they would get completely like disoriented and wouldn't be able to like navigate around. But when they intentionally take them to like a bunch of different nectar sites, they can find their way home to their hive. I guess that's the thing. You go from nectar site to hive, right? Those are two endpoints here for bees. Then they can always get to their way back home. So like, when it comes to making better decisions in life, you need to pepper in randomness, like you say, so that you have the opportunity to make the correct decision. So even though you're mixing in chaos, it's actually it's better for you, perhaps not to do that when it comes to making better decisions in terms of how your life works and how the world's going to ultimately benefit you based on those choices that you make.
Yeah, you just reminded me of that like Mark Twain quote, history doesn't necessarily repeat itself, but it sure does rhyme. And mm-hmm. I think that the more experiences we have that are in, you know, different shapes, you know, different vibes, all these different experiences, these different places, these different conversations that we can have, we are more equipped to understanding how things might rhyme. Like, get, you know, you don't necessarily see the same thing over and over again, but you develop the skills and you're better trained to be adaptive if you don't necessarily just do the same thing over and over. But I think there's something to be said of doing the same thing over and over, because you get really good at one thing in particular, if that's the case. But I think that's the, at least something to look after. Is it worth it to get so good at one thing, or is it better to kind of branch off?
Interesting.
That's like a trade-off, I guess.
Yes. Yes, so, it certainly is.
This next section, this guy says, making fast classifications. The story cracked me up. I think it's because I'm a nerd, but he says, there's a story about a man who went to visit a professor at his home. Outside the house, a dog was playing on the lawn. When the professor opened the door to let the man in, the dog ran into the house. Later, the professor asked the man, "Do you always travel with your dog?" The man replied, "It's not my dog. I thought it was yours." Which is really funny. Like, it's kind of, maybe it's not funny, but I thought it was hilarious to just have a dog in the house the whole time, and both guys think it's the other guy's dog until finally someone asks.
Yeah.
But it's a great metaphor for this section, making fast classifications. We do that so often without even using words, right? Like, there's two stages of our reality, right? Like, we interpret something and then we put language on top of it. But there's a moment in between both those things. And I think that before language even comes into the situation, we just make these general classifications about things because it's helpful, right? It can be very useful. Obviously we can do it incorrectly, which is in the situation they both did. But if someone comes to visit you and there's a dog with this person, like, you might as well assume that it's their dog. Like, why would it not be? And on the same level, if you're walking up to the house and the dog's playing in the front yard, like, oh, they have a dog. You know, it's very harmless, but at the same time, it's very incorrect.
But it's, yeah, but most of the time, it probably is correct. Like, if you make that assumption,
right,
like eight out of 10 times, it actually is going to be like one of the other dude's dogs. So
right,
that's
right.
And that's like, I think that's the main implication of what, like, fast classification actually means in terms of decision making. So it's like, you know, stereotypes and generalizations exist because most people or most things of a particular race or group or tribe or whatever act in certain ways. So of course, not all of them do that, but that's actually, and a lot of stereotypes are actually true. For the majority of that group, which I also think is really interesting. But if we want to make really good decisions, I think the main point is, like, don't jump to quick conclusions, because not everything that you perceive is actually as it actually is in reality. So we use emotions before reason with our brain to perceive rather than evaluate, fully understand, and then make a decision. In other words, we act on impulse, like quick impressions and judgment.
Yeah. Hey man, I think you're breaking up a little bit. Are you moving around at all, or is it just a snag in the connection?
No, yeah, I heard that earlier with you as well. So I wonder if that's just like exchanging back and forth here. But okay, We'll see what it sounds like when we're done, because it might also be that that the listeners don't hear it, but we'll see.
Cool. Cool. Yeah. Man, I was going to say something about what you just said. What you just said, I agree with. And I think the tricky thing is when you don't have time to to really rationalize it. Sometimes, you know, sometimes you just have to make a decision. And you, like you said, we have a very high probability of having a faulty interpretation, because we never have a full, you know, understanding, a completely accurate understanding of reality. We're all kind of working on our own approximations, our own, you know, interpretations. And, you know, but then sometimes it's like time critical. You just have to make a decision. So, I mean, that's where it gets a little bit tricky. But then there's also times, obviously, where it's like, okay, this is a high-stakes situation. Let's take some time and really think through, where am I looking at this from a limited capacity, and how can I improve this decision for, you know, for the long term? And I think those are the times where you really can sit down and, you know, think things through for the most useful outcome.
True that, bro. Yeah, I think that's actually really important as well. Cause like, I don't know, all of these, like, cause sometimes like when you're acting on emotion in like a survival state in this day and age, that actually might push you to, like, you should actually react, try to react non-instinctively, because that actually might be the better choice in terms of how to actually save yourself from that situation. Being able to like pause and evaluate it, right? Which would actually, according to this, go against our evolutionary nature, which is very interesting, which I think is the whole point of this, is like our evolutionary nature causes us to make decisions in bad ways that aren't suited per se, including the ways that they present themselves in an emergency situation, even though that emotion or that state is appropriate for that situation when we feel fear or have to act really quickly.
Yeah. Yeah, man. Which is so crazy. I mean, going back to what we read before, just thinking about like the neurons and the synapses firing and all this, like the, you know, the genes being triggered to create proteins and all, like all of that is so miraculous when you think about just even something as small as like, you know, almost getting in a car wreck, to really think about like the entire human condition during that aspect of like the neurons firing and the hormones that are being produced and the heart starts, you know, racing. And then the crazy thing, which is way off topic probably, but if you start thinking about how like some animals can like smell that on you, like if your adrenaline starts going or like fear is induced, like some dogs, I mean, I don't know, maybe I'm just making this shit up, but I think that like dogs can actually smell, and I think they say bees can smell fear. What is that about? Man, that's fucking wild.
That is wild. But I think that has to do with maybe like another conversation in terms of how energy is felt and manifested in the environment that we live in, which would get into a conversation about probably in like molecular biology and talking about atoms and physics.
Mm-hmm. But so, anyway, so yeah,
the next
so
part is about men and women.
Yes. Yes, it is.
So apparently, you know, women, and this all has to do with acting in our self-interest, right? So like women and men we've evolved differently, obviously, because we're members of the opposite sex. So we have different desires that are in our best interest, which is really interesting. And also like not applicable today, but really just explains a lot of like reasons why people act the way that they do. So like women are primarily concerned about resources when it comes to looking for a man or how they can provide for her. And a lot of that has to do with how we've evolved in the past, because that's really important due to the fact that the number one objective in life is reproduction, and that man is going to be more likely to be able to take care of her family. Mm-hmm. And that's really what it comes down to as well, which is reproduction. So even though, that is in her self-interest, right? And then when it comes to men, the number one thing that's most important to them is just being able to reproduce, like looking for the most, I don't even know how to say this without sounding like ridiculously superficial, but it's just like, just looks for the hottest chick and he tries to bang because all he cares about is just like dropping a seed and making a baby.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, man. Well, and it's one of those interesting things where, you know, I didn't read the full book by Richard Dawkins called The Selfish Gene. But when you put it in those terms and you start thinking about just like a gene that wants to propagate, that makes a lot of sense. You know, like the fact that a man can impregnate many different women and have his genes go on, it, like, evolutionarily speaking, it would make sense to do that, especially like in the tribal times that we came from. And then they said on the other side of it, it's like the women has the opposite effect. They have to like make sure that they're choosing much more wisely. Because I forgot where he says it, but they basically says that a woman just has a lot more at stake. And that makes sense, you know. Like, I mean, especially like in the past, like you said, I think obviously things have changed. And but I think to ignore certain tendencies is foolish. You know, we should understand kind of like why we are the way we are, why we behave this, you know, certain ways. And obviously we're speaking in generalities. It's not, there's no exact way that some people are versus others. But it does explain a lot of, you know, like, I feel like women in general are more giving, right? They're more nurturing. They're more concerned if everybody who's involved is like getting along, if, you know, and obviously, again, it's a general statement, but it's fucking useful. I mean, like, it's a good idea to make sure that, like, you know, the whole squad is like getting on all right. And then anyway, I don't know, I'm just rambling on and on. It's crazy though, because I feel like it's such a the whole gender thing is such like a hot topic these days.
Yeah, it is, man. I think the reason it's a hot topic is because we just have these antiquated ideas about like what gender and stuff means, we are just starting to realize that there are, well, I don't want to justify like behavior, like negative behavior by any means as well, but like, we're realizing that a lot of this stuff is actually, it's not actually like what works today to get us to the next level of like wherever we're going in terms of forming like a giant human consciousness, because like survival is not important anymore. Like, people live long enough. Like, it's just not, like, basic survival is not important anymore.
And right. Well, I agree with you. I agree with what you mean, but it is important, right? Like, it's important, but it's less of a threat.
Well, it's not. Yeah. It's important, like, in terms of like, you got to make sure that those boxes are checked, but it's much easier to check. It's like much easier to check them. You can almost do it unconsciously to be around in this world for a while.
Right.
Like, you don't have to try very hard to be healthy enough to live till you're 30 years old, if you're born without any like serious complications. Like, you'd really have to fuck yourself up to die by not taking care of yourself by 30. And I think a lot of people do. A very, very small minority of people do. So that's kind of my point.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I think it also depends, obviously, on your roll of the dice, right? Like, what hand you're dealt. This guy, I was listening to the CEO of a healthcare company, and he said something along the lines of, you can predict someone's life expectancy way easier by knowing their zip code than their genetic code, which I thought was really interesting. Basically just pointing out the fact that like there are just some areas that just don't have it as good as others, which is an obvious thing to say, but it is pretty extreme.
I mean, the important implication of what you just said goes back to how our genes are actually impacted by our environment. So like, our external environment, literally where you live, can play a big role in like how long you live. And that has to do with a lot of other things that impact that environment externally. Because you might think that you have your own personality and that you make your own decisions and that you are the way you are because that's the way you are. But that's not, it's not true. Most of the way that you are has developed, also influences your way of thinking, which in turn influences how your genes either show up or don't show up. Area.
Which I think is another argument for randomness, because, you know, like you think you are a certain way, but go put yourself in a situation that's a little bit uncomfortable, a little bit unfamiliar, and see how you react to it. And I think that's a telling sign to really, you know, get to know yourself when you're put up against a challenge of something that's a little bit more uncertain than what than your local neighborhood.
For sure, dude. For sure. Cool, man. So let's move on to the next portion, which is the social animal, which is a big one. And this is really summed up by one quote that's one of my favorite of the whole section. It says, "We do not care about our reputation in towns where we are only passing through. But when we have to stay some time, we do care. How much time does it take? A time proportionate to our vain and paltry existence." And that was Blaise Pascal. It's actually most well known, not necessarily for his philosophical statements like that, but for being a mathematician. I can't remember exactly, but I think it's like Pascal's, maybe Charlie Munger talks about that actually. He's got some math shit that he made up, you know?
It's
fundamental. Apparently, you know,
there was a girl that I met in Spain a while ago, and she was an actress, and she was in this movie where, and I think it was based on Pascal's mathematics, that like there was like four of them stuck in a room, and they needed to figure out, it was basically an escape room, and they needed to try to get out as the walls were caving in around them. It was pretty nuts.
And she was in a movie.
What's that?
She was in that movie.
She was in that movie, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, I think it was like Pascal's Room or some shit like that.
Very, very nice.
But that is interesting, though, right? Like, it's kind of interesting. Like, when I travel, I don't travel so that I can be shitty to people. But it is kind of nice when you're in an area where no one recognizes you, no one knows where you are or who you are. And like you can kind of feel free to just do whatever you kind of want, like you be yourself even that much more or something. Whereas if you are in a like a local neighborhood where everyone kind of knows who you are and you're building a reputation, you almost like not you, but maybe me, like you overdo it a little bit, or you could like not express yourself how you want to for the fear of the fact that like, oh, I'm going to see this guy tomorrow. Like maybe I shouldn't make this joke or whatever. Whereas again, if you're just passing through, what does it matter? Just, you know, let it all hang out, as they say.
Yeah. Let it all go, dog. Yeah. You know, I mean, this is basically summed up by the phrase, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas.
Right? Yeah. There you go.
Because actually one of my friends, it was funny, I uploaded that quote to my Instagram story yesterday, and one of my friends just responded and he was like, LOL, Las Vegas Nights. And it made me think about that, which funny. Is hysterical, right? Because that's actually true. And like, you know, like nothing that happens in Las Vegas, with the exception of a mass shooter at a concert, is going to kill you. Well, I guess there's a lot of things, you know, that could kill you in Las Vegas, but I think it's going to be like, for the majority of people that go there, nothing that happens or the decisions that you make are going to be impactful for your survival, because of the reputation that you're setting there, because you don't need to rely on the other clowns in Vegas to help you do the things that you need to do to check those boxes to actually be alive, right? So yeah. Kind of what's up here, but it's cool. I really like that one. And then the next couple sections that are cool here. The next one is, says much of our psychology is the result of cultural influences, which we could speak on a little bit as well.
Yeah, I didn't take many notes on this specific section. But it, you know, here's one key factor, though, that our cultural evolution is faster than our genetic evolution, which makes sense. But it says, since it allows much of what we learn to be passed on and combined with what others around us have learned, which really is pretty important, right?
Yeah, that's also why I think, honestly, books like this might become irrelevant, because everyone might start thinking in a better way because we'll evolve out of this way of thinking. So looking back on stuff like this will be really interesting in terms of how psychology develops for human beings, because they'll be like, huh, look how fucking stupid we were. Like, these were the things that we thought, and this is how it impacted us. But it really is a representation of a transition from wherever we are to wherever we're going.
Yeah.
In terms of how the brain works, which I think is crazy, because like, who knows? Like, there are some people who are very onto this shit, you know, that cultural our cultural ways of doing things might change. There are some people who are completely in the dark and haven't kind of, in a sense, woken up and just do what they do because that's what everyone else does, or like they're influenced by culture. And I guess most people are still like that. But for the ones that are waking up, like, what type of implications does that have for how fast everyone else gets on board? Because there's so much widespread knowledge transfer these days, and so much more accessible, that there's still, even though it's a small portion, it's still an exponentially larger portion of people that are able to like talk about, discuss, and understand ideas like this.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't even know how you would measure that, but I have to believe that's true. With the like, as Jason Silva would say, the radical speed and openness of information. You know, if you want to find something out today, you basically can, and it's easier than ever before to get your hands on and understand stuff, to the point where, you know, universities are becoming irrelevant, especially when you look at the rising costs and the disproportionate ROI that you get on that. I mean, to your point, I mean, man, anything you want to find out, you can be self-taught. It takes, obviously, like the Jocko Willing thing, you know, it takes discipline, right? Like, that amount of freedom takes discipline. That amount of, you'd have to take responsibility for, okay, I'm going to be self-taught and not just, you know, talk a big game and then not show up. But
that is interesting, bro.
So that the other thing too that you just made me think of, I was listening to a podcast yesterday, and this guy was talking about, like, with artificial intelligence. He didn't talk about CRISPR, but like that genetically writing altering tool that the Chinese have created recently, or not recently, but it's been talked about a lot more recently. He's talking about, like, there might be like a bifurcation of our species in the somewhat near future, just depending on how we adopt technology, which is kind of fucking crazy. Like, if you think about, the more that we understand how the brain works and we advance in our technological capacities, like, I don't know, man, this whole thing could get real different real quick.
Yes, that is really,
like,
well, I think,
like, legitimately, I could be like, you know what, I straight up want wings. And then you could, like, go, maybe it would be like the most experimental doctor would be like on an island somewhere, like in, you know, Barbados or some shit. I don't know why I picked that one, but then, you know, you go there and you come back and you're like, oh yeah, sorry. I had to use my pay time off to go get these wings. And now I can fly and you can't, you know?
That is one of the most ridiculous things I've ever heard.
Yeah. Yeah, but like, maybe, I mean, there's much more practical. I mean, I don't know, fuck, man, if you could fly, that would be amazing. But even on terms of like, not just like superficial stuff. What if it was like, yo, I want a 10% upgrade on my IQ.
Interesting.
That would be a crazy thing. I don't know. Anyway, so I don't know if I'm jumping too far ahead here, but he says, let's summarize the forces that influence and set the limits of our judgments. One is genes, 2 is life experiences. The 3rd is the present environment. And 4 is randomness. And I guess what I'm getting at is with this artificial intelligence and all that, I think some of these things might be much easily modified than ever before.
For sure. For sure. We might even edit that selfish gene out of ourselves. That could be cool.
Yeah, like what if it becomes something else? Like, and arguably that's another thing that Richard Dawkins talks about is the meme. You know, the M-E-M-E, a lot of times, you know, when we think of memes, obviously we think of something that's kind of funny, but it's not the original. The original definition is like ideas that are similar to genes in that they can be modified and they evolve and they're passed from mind to mind, as opposed to just like a genetic code. And then that goes to the cultural evolution aspect of how quick memes can be spread and affect a culture way quicker than genetically, you know, that evolution process.
Very interesting. Yeah, that is really cool. Richard Dawkins has a lot of cool, there's a lot of cool quotes from him in here from The Selfish Gene. And I haven't read that either, but maybe that's something we can dive into.
Yeah, I've only read the one chapter. I think it was chapter 10 or something about memes because I was doing research. But that's one of those books that changed some things. You know, it's even if you don't necessarily, I've heard some people, kind of against some of his ideas. But regardless, I think almost on the level, I shouldn't say on the level of Darwin, but it is like a staple in this whole idea of evolution and evolutionary thinking.
For sure, for sure. Okay, cool. So the 3 things that you read were, did you read life experiences, present environment, and randomness?
Yeah, but also on the page before, on page 33, there's also genes.
Right. Genes, life experiences, present environment, and randomness.
Yep.
And a lot of this section is about habits as well, right? And how that kind of ultimately makes us who we are.
Yep.
So yeah. It's kind of Confucius, right? The environment and like what we do consistently.
Right. Exactly. Which is cool. Who was this? Was this Buffett? Yeah, Warren Buffett gives some introductory remarks on why even smart people get bad results. He kind of goes through a paragraph and also says, I always look at IQ and talent as representing the horsepower of the motor. But then in terms of the output, the efficiency with which the motor works depends on rationality. And then he goes on to say, it all gets into habits and character and temperament, and it really gets into behaving in a rational manner, not getting in your own way. So it's, you know, side by side, even if you are like, if I was cloned right now, there's no difference necessarily genetically, but one of us would develop better habits, and that would make a huge difference in the output.
Yeah, and he uses the little analogy there of like a 400 horsepower motor that's kind of operating on a 200 horsepower output, and then a 200 horsepower motor that's operating on a 200 horsepower output. And he says it's better to have the latter because it's functioning at full capacity and it's taking full advantage of itself, which has bigger implications in terms of, what you're born with, man. You can operate within your limitations. But if you actually use everything to get to the boundaries of limitations, you're ultimately going to have a lot more success in life, I think is what it comes down to. And that can also be, all of this that we talk about in this chapter is a culmination of where we end, obviously, because that's one of the last things that he says. But just really about kind of behaving in a rational manner and not getting into your, not getting in your own way.
Yeah. Yeah, and a lot of it, like we said before, is a play in your hand. You know, like you might be less fortunate than many people, but you know, you're probably more fortunate than some people. And regardless of where you are on that spectrum, play that hand the best you possibly can. Otherwise you're wasting it. You know, like, that's the thing. I watched this dude. So I waited tables at a Mexican restaurant. And this guy, he came from Mexico, didn't know English, was a busser at a Mexican restaurant, taught himself English, became a server, then became a manager, and now he owns restaurants. And it's like, you know, just to see the way he played his hand, it's just like, damn, man, that's like, it's inspiring to me. It's, you know, I think it's important not to take these things for granted. And I don't know, I feel like I'm getting all like mushy and shit about this, but like, I feel like it's I think that so many people are playing the role of victim, and obviously there are victims, but it's not helpful. Like, that's some Marcus Aurelius shit. You know, if you don't act like you've been harmed, then you aren't.
Right.
Anyway.
No, I agree. Cool, dude. Well, I think that might be a good place to wrap up, because we've covered a lot of ideas. We've gone through the previous section, which was previous chapter of this part of the section. And it was really cool. It was talking about why we act selfishly and kind of breaking that down a little bit.
For sure, man. So it looks like the next part two is called The Psychology of Misjudgments, which is cool. And I like, I know it doesn't seem like he talks about investments much, but because he talks about Munger so much, it almost has like an undertone of how to be a better investor, or maybe even better put, a better decision maker, which is, I think, something everybody can, you know, everybody has room for improvement in that area, I think.
Definitely. Cool, man. Well, what's on the agenda, Cassano? Where are you going off to? You going to a soccer game today?
No, man, maybe I should. I don't know. I don't know my niece's schedule. I should probably get that on like a Google Calendar or something. But I am gonna ask my sister if she still needs my help and moving some stuff. And I'm gonna go sit up at a coffee shop for the next like maybe 2 or 3 hours and do some research and some writing. And I might even get another workout in today, even though I went yesterday. I'm usually doing like every other day, but I might go back to back, you know, see if I can get actually just like swole.
I mean, hey man, I think sometimes when you're feeling good, you just got to run with it. Speaking of, I went for the first run today, but I've done it 3 months and my knee felt pretty good, man. So I'm kind of getting back into the swing things.
That's badass, dude. That's like, that's the whole thing, man. You don't realize how badass it is to have good knees until you have like a bad one.
Hoping I hold up for the rest of the day, because obviously I put my 3 miles, not much compared to what I was doing, but you know, it's a lot more than zero. So
hell yeah, man. Well, so what are you, you got anything going on down there in Colombia?
Yeah, dude, today's about doing a lot of editing, actually. Like, I'll go out and like try and just enjoy myself. It's a really fucking awesome day, so I'm gonna chill. I'm probably gonna go barbecue at my boy's house later as well. But nice. Prior to that, right now I'm gonna eat and take a nap, I think. But after that, I'm gonna wake up and just clear a lot of shit off my plate, man. There's like just a lot of like notes that I need to pile, and then I need to just basically like stop reading a few different books. Just decide what I'm focused on, just pick a couple things to move forward with, pick a couple big like business initiatives this week, and just fucking close a lot of open loops, if you know what I mean.
I do know, man. Sunday's a good day for that, I think. Do some weekly spring cleaning. Dude, just so you know, it is snowing here right now.
Wow. It's 90 degrees here.
For real?
Yeah, it's fucking hot out.
That's hilarious. It's 36 degrees here.
36 Celsius?
No, it's probably 36 for you Celsius.
Yeah, no, I'm playing, dude. I know you don't measure in Celsius. I know that.
There's one thing I know about you. Don't talk in Celsius.
Yeah, you don't know shit about Celsius. I used to be one of you.
You know what, though, man? All right, before we hang up here, I think we should go to Celsius because it makes more sense. I'll say it. Because zero is freezing, 100 is boiling. Like, let's get – that makes so much more sense than the way we're doing it.
Oh, yeah, definitely. But I digress. Yeah, the entire metric system really makes a lot of sense. The only thing I don't like about Celsius, I would appreciate smaller intervals. I think temperature, I mean, it's, you know, it's there, like Fahrenheit provides a good like range, basically. Basically, it's like 1 out of 100 in a scale of how hot it is, right? Which is, I think, easier to think about.
That's a good point. Because if it goes from like 17, if it's like, oh, it's 17 degrees Celsius, and then it goes to 18, you're like, holy shit. Like, what the? But if it goes from like 75 to 70, 77, that's not.
You can exactly. Feel
it. Anyway, no, the way you said it was much better. But, dude, last thing. I said that just a second ago, but I'm going to say one other thing. I've been sitting in a sauna at the end of my workouts recently, and I've been enjoying that.
Dude, I hit up a steam room every time. I've been crushing so much yoga, and they got a steam room there, and I smash that every time.
Do you prefer steam over a sauna?
I do actually. For the most part, I think there's times where a sauna could do me good. The gym that I worked out in Sri Lanka actually didn't have a steam room, but it had a sauna, and I got into going in there afterwards, and it was cool. I got used to it. Like I could do both. I mean, I don't discriminate, but like after a workout, if I have the choice, like I probably want to get moist.
Yeah. I heard somewhere that you're more likely to get sick in a steam room because other people are in there and it's like in the air and everything. And I have no idea if that's like a valid argument or not, but it like almost makes sense enough to where it made me think about it.
That makes sense. I think it's important to get in a good, well-cleaned steam room, man. You got a lot more opportunity for disease to spread through water rather than dry air. That just makes sense.
Dude, one thing we didn't talk about that I think was in this section of reading was about like the self-interest and how we talk in ourselves, you know, we act in our own self-interest. But then, like, why would an ant climb to the top of a blade of grass over and over again until finally it's eaten by an animal? And the reason is not because of the ant, but because there was a parasite that had entered into the brain's mind that wanted to get eaten by that animal so that the parasite itself is acting in its own self-interest. That shit blew my mind when he was breaking that down.
Yeah, that has a whole other bunch of implications, which is actually, I mean, has to do with like manipulation for people as well, man. There's people that exercise power and ways and control for someone to do something else that might seem kind of like harmless, like, but it's totally in their best interest. And those people are fucking snakes.
Yeah. Yeah, man. I mean, that's some real shit. That is. And again, that's the power of being self-aware and really understanding, you know, having our own understanding of our intent, because then I think you can kind of see when someone's really trying to pull you away from something that you wholeheartedly know that you want to do for yourself. If they're trying to pull you away from that in some ways, you kind of keep an eye on that mofo.
No, I totally agree. Cool, man. Well, let's wrap it up there because we could, you know, talk for another hour as we do. Enjoy the rest of your day, man. Let's let's jam again soon.
Sounds good. All right, bro. Have a good one.
All right, homie.
Peace.
Bye.
The podcast you just heard was recorded with Anchor. If you want to make your own, download the Android or iOS app completely free from anchor.fm/podcast. That's anchor.fm/podcast.